Are you ready?
Now back to Heatwave Sports.
Throw them up to hour two, Heatwave Sports, Fox Sports Radio, 876-1340. We're going to jump into some UNLV talk here in a second. At HW Sports Server on Twitter, and tonight joined by Out of Line, Brian Feldman. He'll be back on air here in 9 hours, so we're going to get that hour jump at 2 o'clock, so it'll be 8 hours for Brian. Brian, 8 hours away from Out of Line, and you got a big show loaded for tomorrow.
Yeah, really excited tomorrow. We were talking during the break, and since I've been around, my favorite coach at UNLV, I'm not going to kid you, maybe Otzelberger will end up being that as time goes on, but it's Lon Kruger, man. I mean, Lon Kruger was the real deal. I loved him at Florida. I loved him when he came here. I still really like him at Oklahoma. Put out a great player in Buddy Hield, and I mean, the guy is just a coach. He can flat-out coach. His players respect him, and his son trying to follow in his footsteps, which is really strange. Spence and I talked about this at the game a little bit, about if Lon Kruger, you know, you hope that Lon, like, offered his son a job, and his son wanted to come to UNLV and pave his own road, which I respect tremendously. I hope it wasn't like, I don't even know if I'm going to ask him that. Maybe I'll make the Wiz ask him that tomorrow to see if, like, did you decide to come? Because you got to know, his dad and him had a good relationship when he played here, and he saw the floor. He started for his dad, played a little bit in Europe, got bored, and came back here and decided to coach. He's going to be on tomorrow. Kevin Kruger, assistant coach at UNLV, is going to be on talking a little bit about this season, looking ahead, because the future looks extremely bright for UNLV. It's sad that Mitru Long didn't really come into his own until about midway through the season, and maybe you blame that on the coach for not recognizing his talent earlier in the season, but still, it sucks that he's a senior and going away, because he would be a great cornerstone for this program going forward, because he just has that moxie. Reminds me of Bryce DeJean Jones, that moxie of a basketball player that you need on a court. But I want to talk to Kevin about looking at this team, Timmy, going ahead. And, I mean, Bryce Hamilton, a sophomore, man. He's got two more seasons at UNLV. The upside of this guy's unreal. I don't think the Wiz will say, if this guy continues to improve in the next 2 years, is this an NBA player?
I believe so, yeah. A guy who can a microwave like that, yeah. Who has scored from every position on the court. He has no definitive cold spot for me. Maybe the turnaround in the paint would improve, but I mean, he has 2 years to do that if he chooses. So
his definitive cold spot, and we talked about this, is the motor. The motor doesn't run 24/7. Like you see Sam Merrill, the motor never turns off. If Bryce Hamilton learns how to control that motor and turn it on for an entire game, we see his ability. I mean, he was first team All Mountain West for a reason as a sophomore, when last year he didn't even start. I mean, for Marvin Menzies, and here he is, a superstar in the Mountain West Conference. So I like this team going ahead, and yeah, so it's going to be pretty cool. Also on tomorrow, Timmy, we got Ricky Stenhouse Jr. I didn't have the stones to ask him if he was a Green Bay Packer fan or not. I was going to ask him that at the end of the interview, and I just couldn't do it. I mean, knowing that his ex is married to Aaron Rodgers, I thought that might not be an appropriate question, even for Out of Line. But Spence and I got a chance to interview him on Friday here with Kyle Engelbert, the program director, did it for us. That was really cool. And also, you'll hear the Sam Merrill interview that you just heard a little bit ago again. And I did get a chance to, after UNLV's loss to Boise State, I walked behind the curtain and I got a chance to spend a few minutes with Bryce Hamilton. And you'll get an opportunity to hear that interview as well. Pretty humble kid, pretty sad. And I think this will be a learning experience. But I'm telling you, Spence and I talked about it. I talked about it with a couple of other our friends. And Timmy, we talked about it as well. The bottom line is this UNLV team should be one of the favorite teams to win the Mountain West Conference next year. Provided everyone comes back. There is a rumor, some moron started a rumor that Spencer caught, saying Amari Hardy's going to graduate and transfer. I don't know why he would do that. He was third team conference, all conference. Where is he going to go? Does he think he's going to go to a D1 school and be a starter and a contributor and work his way into an NBA career? I mean, this is an opportunity to win the Mountain West Conference, win the tournament, and play in the NCAA tournament for sure, staying here next year. DeMond's got something to add on this with Amari. What do you know?
Does that moron have any credibility? Do you
No, Spencer, we thought he did it first because it looked like, and then when Spencer started delving into it, doing due diligence, because he was considering retweeting it and putting
that
it out there.
Major news. I mean, he is a major contributor. He's the best corner three shooter in the Mountain West, maybe one of the best in the country, seriously. And as much as I give and I talk bad about his game, he is a good player. He just needs to be controlled a little bit. And if you can control a player like that, who has definitely a high motor, maybe not the skills, I mean, you're talking about a much different team next year if he's there or if he's not there.
Yeah, and Dembele in the other rumor, Demon was on check to Dembele, and he said also going to transfer out next year. Oh, no, not going to transfer, going to graduate, retire from basketball, and become a student coach, right, or something like that. And now, that made a little bit of sense to me because I got to believe Dembele is hurt, that something is wrong with him beyond what we're hearing, because you know they don't talk a lot about it, but you've got the second, you got two 6'11 guys in your team. As a freshman, Dembele was seeing the floor. He was seeing the floor last year again for Menzies, and it seemed like last year he improved so much over his freshman year. This year he started the beginning of the season, not started, but he was seeing the floor, and then it just went away where he is at the back end of the bench. So I'm thinking maybe he is hurt, and maybe he just can't play basketball anymore. So that part of the rumor sounded like it was legit, but when I heard Hardy's going to transfer as a senior, where the hell is he going to go and get the respect that he's going to get here at UNLV?
Hey, I see what you're saying, but there might be some truth behind that. There are 8 new players coming into this new class.
That's right. That we talked about that.
8 players, 13 scholarship spots. Only 3 people are leaving definitely. Only 3 seniors are freeing up those spots. It's one of those situations where it's just you do the math and somebody's going to have to go.
Yeah, there'll be some red shirts. Donnie Tillman's not coming back, right? He played himself off that team with his off-court incidents, and he didn't even play in the Mountain West tournament. You notice that.
Tillman's but I don't know how hurt he was still was. He just came back from being hurt, Tim. I'd be surprised only because Donnie Tillman was the Pac-12 player of the year last year, or excuse me, Pac-12 sixth man of the year last year for Utah, and to get that was like TJ's brightest moment with his chest pumped out for this season, and he's going to let him go? I don't know.
I don't see him coming back. I don't see DeJong coming back. Here's the thing with Hardy, and maybe I'm the only person in Las Vegas that feels this way. I thought he underperformed this year.
No, Spence has been saying that all year.
On what the hype coming into the year, he's supposed to be the guy.
Yeah.
He looked like Amari Hardy of last year many times this year, and we didn't like the way he played last year, right? Taking unadvised shots, just ridiculous. He becomes option 3 if he comes back, though. David Jenkins, Moses Wood are your top 2 options next year, guys that are coming in.
And you still got Marvin Coleman coming back.
Marvin
too,
Coleman,
you?
Right.
I hate watching him shoot basketballs. Great playmaker, but it's just awful watching him.
It's not a pretty shot, but he is a good basketball player. And he's one of those guys, Spencer, when you talk about a motor, another one of those guys like Metro Long, his motor's running the whole time he's on the court.
He's a great, and Amari Hardy became better as the season went on, mostly because Metro Long took the ball from him. And then Marvin Coleman really took that step forward. He started him at the end of the season. Amari Hardy can play off the ball very well, but unfortunately, he doesn't like playing without the ball, and I think that's what really hurts him.
Oh, and Hamilton, right? He's an option. You're running out of balls.
Hamilton is not only an option. I'm telling you right now that, I mean, who's going to be who? Would you not say that Bryce Hamilton has to be one of the favorite players to be Mountain West Player of the Year next year?
Yeah, I mean, if we're taking bets, I'll put him on.
I would say he'd be one of, you know, I'm looking at the guys around the league, and I would say he's right there with the people returning that could be in the running for that. I'd be shocked. He was already Mountain West player, Mountain West first team this year. He'll be that again. And yeah, I mean, if he takes a step forward, because there's still a lot of room for improvement, more than just the motor. Defensively, he had lapses, and then some very ill-advised drives to the lane and shots that, with maturity, those things hopefully go away.
You think Antonio comes back?
Oh, yeah.
I hope so.
Yeah, I think so. I think Antonio, the end of as the season wore on and he started making more and more perimeter shots and becoming more efficient more proficient from the perimeter, that's what he was brought here to do, was be an outside threat. And he started hitting bigger threes. I mean, the truth of the matter, in that Boise game, Antonio kept him in the game.
He shot 4 of 9 from downtown.
But they were big 4 of 9.
Of course. No, that's a good shooting percentage from downtown, especially in college. You can keep him within the 37 to 43% from downtown. You have one of the best players in the conference, hands down.
Yep, I agree.
So how do we rate year 1 of TJ Otzelberger? People are giving him, let's grade it. People are giving him, I saw somebody give him an A, which is ridiculous. I'll give him a C. I think that's fair.
You know what? I'm gonna give him one better than this would have been, a complimenter. You know, he is who we thought he was, but I'm gonna say he's better than that. I'm gonna say he's better than I thought he would be this year. I like the recruiting ability. I like what he brought in, and where I'm gonna say this, and the reason I'm gonna say this, is at the beginning of the season, Bryce Hamilton was not mentioned anywhere to be any kind of conference player. He brought the best out of Bryce Hamilton. Not only the best out of him, but he turned a guy who nobody was talking about into a first-team conference player, and here we are discussing him as potentially conference player of the year next year. So if T.J. Otzelberg, you don't want to give him any credit for anything else, somebody turned Bryce Hamilton into this beast that he is right now, and you got to say a coach has to recognize that and free up that player to do so. He recognized it in practice. He saw that this guy's got special skills, and he was able to get those skills to come out in a pretty damn positive way. So I'll say I'm going to give him a B, a solid B for his first season with UNLV.
I have to give him a C minus, and the problem I have with him is he's not a very good X's and O's guys. We saw a very stagnant offense for a majority of the season. Great at player development, great with player relationship. You can tell he has the attention of all these players. But, you know, when you need him to perform the most, and yes, he did beat San Diego State. I can never take that away from him. But losing a game in Boise State like that after you end the season so hot, you know, he didn't game plan very appropriately. And you know what? I'll say this. On senior night, I'm still upset that he started all the seniors for the first 5 minutes of the game. I think that was a terrible decision. I think if you're trying to win the Mountain West tournament, that's the worst thing you can do. And I think it hurt him when they played Boise State. You're not getting the proper scouting. You're not getting the proper matchups because that's not who you're going to play when you play him in the Mountain West tournament. So why wouldn't you do it at the very end of the season? That really upsets me. And that mindset alone bothers me a lot.
Well, that's why you gave him the B minus or the C minus. I get it right there. And I think way too hard on the guy. And I get what you're saying, but you really soured when he started all five. I've never seen anyone. When those three seniors started, this guy turned beet red. And that was it. All he saw from T.J. Otzelberger, it was like he failed his exam right there. And you know what? I don't think it hurt them because all three of the seniors, Sheeble, Mitru Long, and
Blair.
Nick Blair, all play. They all see the floor. It's not like he took a guy at the back end of the bench and said, hey, come on, you're going to start because you're a senior because grandma's in the stands.
Yeah, it's not like Snacks was on the court.
It's not like Jamie Shoes Johnson from the 1979 Michigan State team that went out there and blew his shoe.
Tell me a worse offensive lineup. Go ahead. Out of the whole roster, put five guys together on the team and tell me a worse offensive lineup.
Spencer, not only did they win the game, but he didn't keep the lineup in the game for very long at all.
5 minutes isn't a long time?
It's not a long time.
It's
they're winning,
a quarter of,
but they're winning the game, and they came out.
How
and they
many points
well.
Did they score in the first 5 minutes?
I understand what you're saying. But
three
you're,
points.
You're,
that's the
you're
answer.
You're being
to that question.
Too hard on him for being maybe a little bit of a softy when it came to senior night.
I'm trying to win the Mountain West tournament. I'm not trying to serve ice cream here.
I respect that tremendously. But here's the deal, TJ Otzelberger for his first season here. I don't know how much more we would have expected out of him than what we got. We see what's coming in. We see the recruiting class. So you have to take that into consideration, his grade of what we have coming up and what he did, how he made do with what he had, developing a superstar. I just don't know how you can give this guy a bad grade this year. And here's the one thing different. Come on, you're not going to tell me it's a tremendous upgrade from Marvin Menzies?
Come on.
I'm watching TJ on the side. He's coaching. Marvin Menzies half the time was putting on a show, dancing, jumping up and down. I like Marvin, but TJ looked like he was coaching. It just was a different environment for
what
me.
What kind of bar are we trying to clear here? I mean, seriously. You can't, don't say that. Really, don't. But can we both agree on this? This has to be a top two team next year. That's a fireable offense. Roster wise and,
whoa,
you know, developing
buddy,
coach.
Calm
and
down.
The Mountain West. And the Mountain
fireable.
West.
Wow. He's a very passionate.
What did they
UNLV
end? What did they end this season?
You can't fire a coach after 2 years.
He's the
no
highest paid
what.
Coach in the conference. They can't just let him go if
no,
they don't
seriously.
Finish top two in the conference next season.
The roster they have, we can all agree that the roster next year is much better, right? It's significantly better. And where did they end this season? Fourth.
Well, hey, tied with the second best record in the conference for conference play. They all ended up 12-6. Utah State and Nevada had better overall records, which is why they both got higher seeds.
Sam Merrill's leaving next season. We're going to have the best roster in the Mountain West next season.
DeMond, I'm telling
you that
this.
We? Where?
That's Homer
I'm
City.
I'm ready to put on
and
a court.
I'm ready to put on
a jersey.
You know what's good, DeMond? I'll tell you what. He might be slightly out of his mind with this and chopping off a coach's head, but I think he needs a nod for AD because you get an AD like that, heads will roll if you don't win.
If we don't have a top two finish, you're out of here.
The only coaches that are coming here are good coaches that are very confident and are very well paid. So I like the mentality But to me, and that was my one issue with the whole Menzies thing, is he came into the first year in a dumpster fire. The third choice, throwing him the job, they throw him a bone, and he has nothing to work with. And he's basically given three seasons. I thought that was harsh, but I didn't love the results, so I can't complain about it. You got to give this guy, I look at a coach like this. How long are you supposed to go to college to earn your bachelor's degree? How long does it take?
4 years.
4 years. I think every coach deserves a college career.
Do you think TJ inherited a dumpster fire?
No. And I didn't say that he did. But, yeah, he came. The reason I'll say, I'm not going to say no emphatically. Yes, partially, because think about this. Timmy, TJ comes in, and again, it's a firing of Menzies. Menzies went out and got a bunch of misfits, guys like Jakur Justin, who turned out to be a prominent D1 player. I mean, seeing the floor and contributing heavily at Oregon. He went out and got guys, a Javon Mooring. Now, Javon Mooring we all talked hero ball, this, but Javon Mooring was an exciting college player that won a couple of big games for Marvin and for that team. But again, he inherited nothing. And TJ comes in, and his best players, the bottom line is, now, if he's able to maintain Joel and Tomboy, okay, if he's able to keep him, he keeps Houston, then I'm going to agree with you. He lost their two best players. They did not come back. And then he finds that, wow, even though those two didn't come back, I might have a better one than both of them in Bryce Hamilton. And he developed him. I don't think he came into as bad of a situation as Menzies, but it still wasn't a really good situation. It's not like Marcus Arroyo, the situation he's coming into. Now, if this guy doesn't find a way to win in 2 or 3 years, hell yes, get rid of him. He's coming in to the nicest facility in the country, in the Fertitta Center. There is not a better workout facility in the country, and his team gets to start off playing in an NFL stadium. Not just any NFL stadium, one of the most state-of-the-art NFL stadiums, and he is going to be able to play the first ever game in that stadium. Come on, man. This guy has it made. Otzelberger's a little up against it, and so I think C-minus is a little bit harsh for a guy's first year, but I can respect it, and I respect your desire to win, because at Michigan State, I tolerate very little. I want winners. I was good. No one can believe that I was happy that D'Antonio left and bailed. The guy was a scumbag, and I'm sorry, I can't believe I'm saying that now. He knew what went on at that school. You're going to tell me this? He bailed because he knew what went on there. I lost all respect for him. And so I'm just as harsh on my university as well, but you got to be fair. These are human beings. I don't think he did a bad job. He finished above 500. I'm not going to say that's a great thing, but he did beat. Let's be fair. He beat Utah State once, and he beat San Diego State once. That's a good season right there, just those two teams alone.
Yeah, 17 and 15. The thing I don't like about coaching, or coaches, let's put it that way, and I know a lot of it has to do with the roster talent, and I think, like you guys said, next year we're looking at a way more talented team with just those two top recruit or transfers coming in. Don't tell me you're going to play run-and-gun basketball and not do it. And I know a lot of it has to do with what's on the court, right? But don't come in and use that, David Rice, and say you're going to run and gun and then don't do it. They average, what, 70 points a game against a weak Mountain West conference? To me, that's BS. I don't want to hear that. So maybe now that the athletes that are coming in, maybe I want to see if he's true to his word and he's going to run, because that's what people want to see out here, right? Right, Brian? You live through the dark years.
The culture to me, when I came out to Las Vegas from Detroit, is I was super excited to see this brand of basketball, because they were the running rebels. And that was it. They were the running rebels. They were a team that produced a high volume of offense. They were up and down the court. When you came into the Thomas and Mack Center to play a Jerry Tarkanian basketball team, you better be in damn good shape, because you're going to be running up and down that court if the Rebels get to play their game. And that is a fun brand of basketball to watch. You didn't see a ton of defense, but you saw a whole bunch of offense, and not just normal offense. It was exciting offense. Their offense of the early 90s reminded me of like Houston's offense, like Phi Slamma Jamma. They played above the rim, and they could hit from the perimeter as well. A lot of fun to watch that UNLV team back then, and I think we want that culture here. I think, please don't ever change the name of the team, the Runnin' Rebels, like they tried to change the logo a couple years ago, because that was the worst thing ever. Oh my God, a paperweight. They tried to pass off a paperweight as the UNLV logo. Amazing.
I still see this merch with that logo on it. So
yeah, and it's like it's clearance.
On the dumpsters.
It's clearance
on campus. It's on the dumpsters.
Here's my thing on it though. Better team coming in. On paper, the schedule got a hell of a lot harder too, though. And I think this might be a possibility of a work trip, guys. Is they play in the Maui Invitational next November.
Yeah, buddy.
We need to figure out a way to be out there for this.
Well, we gotta have a producer out there, don't we? How are we gonna get by without a producer?
And
Magnum, for God's sake, we can't take Magnum. He's gonna have the coronavirus from going to Japan all the time.
I'm already scheming. Like, I traveled with the team once to go to Fresno to set up for the ESPN Las Vegas broadcast. I'm going to see if I can get that gig full time and just like, because I'm only thinking about Maui.
Oh,
I'll be the guy
Maui.
Who travels with
the team. You know what's funny? A couple of years ago, we had a guy on the team named Good Luck Okonobo who was only thinking about Maui too. Remember? He waited till after the Maui Classic and then he transfers. I've never seen anything like that in my life. The guy plays on the team, stays, and then he transfers right after the Maui Classic. Like, that wasn't premeditated. But you know what? That's pretty smart, man. I'd have done the same. How are you going to blow up? We're going to Hawaii this year. I'm going to wait and transfer after the Hawaii trip. Come on, I'd do it.
Me and Bill Walden, maybe Jay Billis, you know, we're just all hanging out. I don't know what's going to happen, but, you know, I got to get there first.
Well, if you start hanging out with Bill Walden, you miss the plane coming home. I mean, it'd be that simple. You got to get a tie-dye shirt, and, you know, Bill Walden and Bob Marley are best friends, so.
So look at this field. North Carolina, Davidson, Providence, Indiana, Alabama, Stanford, Texas, UNLV. Those are tough matchups either way. UCLA comes to the MAC next year. Cal comes to the MAC. And the Rebels play road games at Kansas State, VCU, and SMU. That's just the out-of-conference.
Second place or get it, fire him. Did you hear what Spencer said? That's
that.
It.
Yes.
I'm just the reason I say that is because, look, if you're improving your roster significantly next year, you want to see an improvement, right? So if you don't see that, carry that to the next 3 years. Then you suddenly accept and improve. Then, like, suddenly you think it's going to start improving in the future for no reason. I mean, you have to project these things or else you're going to waste your time for seasons to come.
No, I agree, but we are projecting that they're going to have a better season this year, and it is set up to have a better season by what TJ has done this year.
That's
and
all I want
to
see.
He is set up to have a good year, and I agree.
I hope he does.
I expect this team, unless barring some injuries to top players like a guy like Bryce Hamilton, I would say this team, to me, should finish no worse than second in the Mountain West this next season, and I'm right there with you. But
more.
I'm not going to say fire him if they don't. I'm going to say all of a sudden, now we have a probation situation because you just took a good team and you turn them into crap. But we'll see what happens. I think that it'll be okay.
Let me give you a great example. The Grizzlies, they fired Dave Fizdale after 1.25 seasons. And everyone's like, oh, this is the worst thing ever. And then he goes to the Knicks and look what he does. The Grizzlies projected the performance they saw on the court onto the future and they took action for it. And now look at them. They're in the eighth seed in the West as the youngest team in the NBA. And I'm not saying TJ's going to have a bad season next year. Of course not. I think he is going to have a great season, but
I think Spence is the GM of the Los Angeles Wildcats, Damon. Remember they fired their defensive coordinator for one game?
I think his name was Pepper Johnson.
One game.
Yo, out of here, buddy.
All I know is, man, it'd be awfully tough to play for him, wouldn't it?
Oh, we're down at halftime? Might be a new coach after.
Yeah, that's it.
All
that's
I want is success.
It'd be like you ever see the movie Miracle, Herbie Brooks? Again! Well, dude, the lights have been off for 20 minutes. Again!
Yep.
That would be Spencer. Again!
That was Kurt Russell, though.
That was Kurt Russell, but yeah, Herbie Brooks, man. Herbie Brooks, the coach of the great Olympic team. We just talked to one of his players a couple weeks ago and out of line. We had Kenny Morrow on the team who...
interviews on YouTube.
Might have been one of the most fortunate hockey players to ever play the game. If you don't know who Kenny Morrow is, Google him. Played on the Olympic team and then 5 straight Stanley Cup teams with... talk about 6 years of no winning. They didn't win all 5 Stanley Cups, but they won 4 of the 5 and the Olympics. What a 6-year run that was.
He was a winner. That's what it is. When we come back, we will take a look at the NCAA tournament from abroad. Spencer did some research. I need to see this research, hear this research. And we'll wrap it up with a little VGK talk as the Knights back in action tomorrow afternoon up in Calgary. Heatwave Sports, back after this.
Look at us. Hey, look at us.
Look at us. Huh? Who would have thought?
Not me.
Now back to Heatwave Sports with Tim Oglesby and Tom Barton.
Chop, chop. intern Spencer with us tonight. Spencer did some NCAA research as we look ahead towards Selection Sunday. And, you know, guys, we'll be the first show locally to talk about the Field of 68 next Sunday night on Heatwave Sports. So all the other shows can listen to our show and gather information to talk about on their show, Brian. You know how that goes.
Absolutely. I'll be one of them.
At least you admit it.
100%.
So, Spence, you broke this down for us. What do you got?
I was trying to objectively pick who would win the tournament this year. So I'm looking at trends over the last three seasons of who won championships. And there's one stat that really concerned me. Gonzaga is 128th in scoring allowed per season. And I said, has this happened at all? And 3 years ago when North Carolina won their championship, guess what? They were 127th in the league in scoring. So I said, is there any other stat that I can point to that may be an indication that Gonzaga has a chance, like I believe? And I found one. Of the last three seasons, in the top 10, they have been in scoring differential. And guess what? Gonzaga is like number one. And yes, they have been in the past, but this season specifically, they're also in the top 10. And every other team before that has also been in the top 10 in scoring differential. So that's who I'm picking, first of all, to win the NCAA tournament. Spoiler alert.
Gonzaga.
So I got.
Probably won't get much value on that, but Brian, this isn't necessarily a betting show, but you and I have some extra money that we want to kind of filter around the tournament here. And give me some of your, just off the top of your head, teams that you feel are going to go make a deep run into this tournament.
You know, Gonzaga is actually a really cool pick. And, you know, I've always said, I don't think he's underrated or not respected the way he should be, but Mark Few is a great basketball coach. I mean, a great basketball coach, not just on the floor, but as a recruiter as well. Every year, this team is significant. And why would he ever leave? I mean, I'd never leave if I was him. He's the president of Gonzaga and will be forever. Nobody makes more money at the school than him. That guy should never leave. And he's a really good coach. And I had the opportunity to interview him a couple years ago. Absolutely love him. I like the Kansas Jayhawks. I do. I think they're number one for a reason. I think Bill Self is another guy that I respect tremendously as a basketball coach. He's a motivator. He's a recruiter. He is just a flat-out winner. And once again, Bill Self has this Kansas Jayhawk team firing on all cylinders at the right time of the season. Are there holes? Absolutely. There's holes in every team. But I think they're going to be as tough of an out as anybody. And again, you know, you just can never count out a guy like John Calipari in this tournament either. That Kentucky team is scary good. They're now they've crept their way into the top 10. They've only got five losses on the season. We'll see how they do in the Southeastern Conference tournament next week. But that is a team that I would look out for. Some of the houses of cards and some of the teams that I don't like Florida State, they've been going in the other direction. And those are the things you look at, Spencer. I think when you look at trends, how are teams trending at this point in the year? And that's why a team like Utah State is really scary, because they're putting it together at the right time of the year. And that's what you look at. And a team to me that is really scary, and I know I'm being a homer here, and I'll say we, like my buddy Spencer, the Michigan State Spartans are a team you do not want to mess with right now. They beat Maryland on the road. They beat Penn State on the road. And Cassius Winston, I don't know that there is a more proficient point guard in the country. When that man is on his game, he is the best there is in the country at the point position. When he's not on his game, he's the third best there is in the country in the point position. Cassius Winston is dangerous good at the collegiate level, and I would not be at all surprised if Sparty's cutting down the nets at the end of the year, because Tom Izzo can flat-out coach, and this is his prime time. Tom Izzo's like a coach you remember years ago. Spencer, just because he's the Wiz, will know who he is, but you never got to see him coach. A guy that coached Louisville for years named Denny Crum. What Denny Crum would do every year is he would give Louisville the toughest schedule in the country, and they'd end up having 11 losses going into the tournament, and then they'd make this ridiculous run, because he said, I want to play the best. I just need to get into the tournament with my team knowing they can play anybody in the country. So he would schedule those games, and if you know Louisville, Nervous Purvis Ellison years ago as a freshman, this guy, Milt Wagner even before that, Denny Crum would get the most out of his players. Tom Izzo is a very similar type of basketball coach. He coaches for the tournaments at the end of the year. Yes, he wants a good record. Yes, he wants to win the Big Ten, but it's not as important, because what every coach wants is they want the dance. They want to be holding up that trophy at the beginning of April to win it all. And the focus of the best coaches is there, not winning their conference tournament. Coaches that focus on winning their conference or their conference tournaments are coaches that know they have no chance of winning the NCAA. So that is their big dance. So those are two teams I really like. I like Kansas and I like the Michigan State Spartans.
I like Kansas. And obviously they're going to be everybody's favorite at four. Right now, essentially, it's 4.5 to 1. We'll see how it goes after the tournament next week. But if we went and bet on Michigan State right now, Feldman, 12-1.
I love it.
You like that?
I love it. The plus 1,200, Michigan State, that's a $100 bet all day long. I'm not going to go more than that, but I think that is a great $100 bet.
And you made a good point about the point guard. You know, Mateen Cleaves was the reason they won the national title.
Actually, he was, but Morris Peterson was probably more the reason they won that national title. Morris Peterson, of course, went on to a pretty decent NBA career. And Mateen Cleaves blew out his ankle in the Final Four, and Pete had to pick it up tremendously. But you are right. Mateen Cleaves ran the engine of that Michigan State team that won the national title. As a matter of fact, a good buddy we always talk about here, Larry Eustacey, had coached that Iowa State team that played Michigan State in the Elite Eight. They had Marcus Fizer, who was a hell of a player back then. And that's when Larry Eustacey was National Coach of the Year back in the early 90s. But I'll tell you, or not early part of the century, I should say. I think that, but Kansas, when you look at Kansas, the league they play in the Big 12, and it is a much improved conference. You know, when you've got two teams in the top four in the same conference, it's letting you know that they're trying to rival the ACC, even though I think the ACC is still head and shoulders above the Big 12. I think the upper echelon of the Big 12 is catching up with that. So, but you know, Kansas, and again, I did throw in there Kentucky. I just will never count out Kentucky. Kentucky has two players that are definitely going to play in the NBA, and whenever you have a collegiate team with two NBA players on it, anything can happen. If those two guys play to the best of the ability and they are next-level players, yeah, they should win it. They should win the championship.
We sat in a T-Mobile press room for the Coaches vs. Cancer when Kentucky played Utah and they lost a close game. And Calipari sat there and said, look, we're young. Talk to us in March. They've ran through the SEC conference. Right. They're 14-1 right now. 14-1 plus 1,400, Brian. That's a $100 bet if you got the money.
I want to ask you something, and ask Wiz this question, because maybe you'll know, because I haven't followed them a great deal, and I don't know if you have. I just recently started delving into the Dayton Friars, and looking at this team, the Flyers, excuse me, and looking at this team, two losses, 27-2. Now, they play in the Big East. The Big East is not the Big East of old. It is the Big East of now. It's not the Georgetown, St. John's, Villanova, Seton Hall, you know, that it was back then, Syracuse, you know, but it's still the Big East. So it's not that Dayton has not played anybody. They have, and they've lost two games. Spencer, does this team have any chance of winning a national title, or is this the biggest house of cards there is? DeMond, you know about this
Dayton's
team?
Just in the A-10.
Oh, the A-10, my bad, yes, okay. What do you got, Spencer?
Dayton is third in scoring differential, which I said.
But we're talking Billy Beane here in analytics. But I love it. He's an analytical guy.
No, I'm just saying, like, that's. I think that is a factor. And, of course, you got the opponents played. But I think that they just feel ready for this tournament for some reason. And, you know, I think they can lock in defensively. And I definitely think they are at least a candidate for Final Four, if not the finals, for sure. I'm definitely behind you on that one.
Two losses. I mean, you got to you've got to take that into account.
Confidence just, going into the
March Madness, too. I just think you see the name Dayton and you immediately discount them. And I think a lot of people do that with San Diego State as well. You know, you discount a two-loss team that you just don't think is playing in a conference that is going to be able to compete when it comes time for the national stage. But Gonzaga plays in a conference like that. I mean, Gonzaga's biggest opponents in their conference, who BYU and St. Mary, I mean, those two teams will get destroyed in the tournament. So, you know, but yet Gonzaga has a chance. So why not Dayton? You know, you never know. What do you think, Timmy? You think a team like Dayton's is the real deal?
I think they're good. But let's see how they do against, battle-tested teams. And I hate to say battle-tested in that Dayton's played just as many games as the rest of these teams have, but the caliber competition in the A-10 is not going to be up to speed with what the ACC, the Big East, the Big 10, the Big 12 did this year. I look at a team like Louisville, 20-1. I think that's prime for if you have an extra money, Louisville is a team to look at. I think a team like Seton Hall, 15-1, another battle-tested team this year. But I think Dayton will do okay. I think it's Sweet 16. I could see that. And as a one seed, which they might be, they will be a one seed.
Yeah,
I think Dayton can make the Final Four. I think it's a smart bet to put money on Dayton, because I think Obi Toppin is one of the best players in the country, Obi Toppin. And one of those things, when you look analytical, they are the best shooting team as in field goal percentage in the nation. you know, make the most shots.
Are they up to the pressure, though? Can they handle this pressure?
That's what we're going to find out. I mean, this is definitely a bigger stage than those guys have ever been on. They have been in the national spotlight for a while now. They've been weeks at the top of the charts, so they know what it's like to have people watching, the press watching, and they haven't really stumbled. Where Baylor has stumbled a few times, Dayton has not.
And we've talked about that even in, like, let's talk about football just for a second. Like, Clemson, everyone's like, oh, Clemson doesn't play anybody. And look what they've done the past few years. I mean, they lost, obviously, in the finals. But the fact that when they come to the playoff time, they're just as ready as any other team. So I don't think that, you know, who they play is the best barometer for how they're going to perform in the future.
What about the team that nobody's talking about in the mix of favorites? And it kind of just sets uneasy in my stomach about it. And that's the Crypt Keeper in Krzyzewski. How come nobody's talking about Duke this year? 15-1
And with Coach K, and it's an excellent point, Timmy, you've always got to give them a shot with Coach K and Duke. You don't know what he's going to pull out of his sleeve. I am not a gigantic Coach K fan. However, like he says, I have to look up in the rafters when I want to be a detractor, and I see five banners hanging up there. So it's kind of hard not to look at that. But you have to consider Duke in the mix. 23-6, and Duke is starting to play pretty good basketball right now as well. And they've got a couple of players that are difference makers. And so I like putting them in there. You know, one of the teams we skipped and we're not talking about because Michigan State just went in and beat, but the Maryland Terrapins. I were thinking earlier in the season, this is a team that is really surprisingly good. And then, you know, it comes down to the Grizzle tournament. You know, you get down at home, you can't lose. I don't care if it's Michigan State. If you are truly a national contender, you can't lose a home game at the end of the season to a conference rival. You just can't. And that showed me that Michigan State was ready for the tournament and Maryland's not.
No, for sure. And one thing I wanted to say about Duke is I think not having someone like Zion Williamson on their team could probably be the best thing that could ever happen to them. They had three players in the top 10 go in the draft, and that's the only story that was going on last season. And now they're just kind of sneaking by and being just as good as they were last year. And I think that could be so beneficial to the team just overall for the tournament.
Oh, I won't disagree with you at all. And, you know, another team that we really haven't brought up, and I brought up their old coach, is, you know, the Louisville Cardinals. I mean, this team is another team that can play basketball. And they've had some tough games. Every year they play the top talent in the country. And they never shy away from schedule. I mean, you know, they had the Rick Pitino fiasco over there. But, you know what, it didn't hurt them. The program just keeps going. Louisville is one of those storied programs that is going to rebound, no pun intended, and be good again. And, you know, they're the number 10 team in the country coming into this week, 24-6, and you know, depending how they do in the ACC tournament,
that's not a team I want to play. Put it that way.
No, I think they're a team that's going to be tough. And one of the other teams, again, I haven't watched a great deal this year, but they've been in the national stage for a while now, is Creighton. I mean, Creighton's a team that, you know, I think they're a Sweet 16 team, but I don't think much more than that. But then again, they're a very well-coached basketball team that continues to make noise at this time of year and in the NCAA tournament.
It's just hard to predict. I know we're talking about it, but it is hard to predict because there are a lot of great teams, but everyone knows when March Madness starts, you know, you can think the teams are the best, and then it all and it just goes away in the first, like, day of March Madness. But, you know, I think the teams that we've talked about are legitimately, I think half of them will make it into the final or the Elite Eight.
One thing I was going to just say, Tim, I was trying to whisper to you, but sleeper, you know, one of the things talking about sleepers in the tournament, you want a great sleeper, and we're not talking about them at all, nor should we, but they're playing good again. And they won a national championship last year, and they have a coach that just 2 years ago. I mean, you want to talk about a great coach to be able to recover from being the first number one overall seed ever to lose to a 16 seed, and a year later come back and win the national championship. That is resiliency. That is truly the ability to have short-term memory loss. And man, Tony Bennett is the real deal. One of the young, up-and-coming great coaches at this level. And Virginia, right now, I think they're ranked, they were 22nd coming into the week, 21-7 going into this week. I got to believe the odds on them, Timmy, have got to be 30-1 to win the national title, maybe a little less than that. Let's say 22-1. What are the odds? You tell me.
Virginia, defending champions, big win today, as a matter of fact, right? 75-1 right now.
What do you think of 75-1, Spence?
You talk about
shot.
The best defensive coach in the country too, and you look at that team that he took to the finals and won the finals with. You know, and again, I try to look at trends, like, statistically, And you see the talent that has won over the past few years, like NBA talent. And he had one, which is DeAndre Hunter. And he's not that great, let's be honest. He is a first-round talent. But, you know, and compared to some of the other guys that have won national titles, I mean, the fact that he even won the finals with him, I think is insane. And to discount him, the best defensive coach in the country, is pretty crazy to me.
And that's why I'm saying Virginia at 75-1. All right, there is definitely Timmy. We got to put some of that fantasy football money we won last year on, because to me that is, you're looking for a sleeper. That right there is the best sleeper in the country odds wise. If you're betting, I can't think of a better one right now.
And you can hedge through. All you got to do is get through the first week, and you start making money at that point. Guys, let's wrap this up tonight with a little VGK talk. Brian, you do a segment every Sunday morning on Out of Line. And so this will be, I guess, a preview of what you're going to talk about tomorrow. But the Knights in action in Calgary, 4 o'clock, puck drop. Knights back on a roll again, Mr. Feldman. 9 of their last 11, they put the W's up. And Mr. Robin, I'm going to call him Mr. Robin, making people a little antsy about Fleury here. So why don't we talk about the team first and then get into the goalie controversy?
Well, 9 of their last 11, but they're 1-2 in their last 3 games, and including getting shut out yesterday, well, now 2 days ago, to the Winnipeg Jets, who are playing for their playoff lives right now. But a 4-0 shutout wasn't great. That was coming off of a shutout of the New Jersey Devils at home, but come on, New Jersey sucks. So that's not really a big win. And then they lost to the Kings, who the Kings are playing scrappy, good hockey right now, even though they're dwelling in the bottom of their conference. They're playing pretty good. But Calgary is a team that could make noise in the Stanley Cup playoffs. This is a team that is a decent hockey team, and they're on the road. This is another one of those games for the Golden Knights that I think they need to come back from that 4-0 shutout and win this hockey game. But is it a mandatory game? No. I think the Golden Knights are fine going forward, and I think for all the Pete DeBoer detractors out there, I was never one of them. I wasn't thrilled with Girard getting fired. I mean, he's an ex-Red Wing. I thought he did a tremendous job. I thought, how do you fire a guy that took a team to, you know, we've been through this a million times. I don't need to rehash all that. But the one thing I've known about Pete DeBoer, and every one of his players at San Jose said it, man, that guy motivates me. He knows how to motivate me. And it's funny because when you see him in the locker room or, you know, in the press conference, he's like quiet. He doesn't say very much. He looks like, you know, a good big win could blow him over. And yet the bottom line is the guy can coach. And this is a different hockey team since he took over. Right before the All-Star break, I was like, oh, he's not doing so well, and a couple losses here and there. And then this team has turned it around. They've turned the corner. And the one thing I love about Pete DeBoer is his fearlessness when it comes to mixing up lines. He will change a line two, three times in a game. Gerard Gallant was always reluctant to do that. He just kept sticking with it. Well, I know it's not working right now, but it has in the past. No, man, when it breaks, you got to fix it right away. And you got to keep playing, keep throwing glue and mending it until you find the right matches. And sometimes those matchups will change 4 or 5 times in a season. Guys that were playing together early aren't anymore, so let's put one new guy in there. Let's try a new centerman. This guy's not winning draws, so put him in. These guys aren't playing well in the neutral zone, so let's make a few changes here. That's what you have to do in hockey, is changing on the fly. And coaches that can do that have more job security. Hockey is the one sport that happens every year. I mean, 8 coaches fired in season this year. That's a third of the league. That's what happened there, a quarter of the league. But that's what hockey does.
And I think they did exactly what I talked about earlier in the show. They projected Gallant through the rest of the season, and they weren't happy with it. They said if he does his performance in the first half of the season and he does it in the second half as well, which they should probably think he would, like, how can you expect a coach to change drastically in the middle of a season? And they said, we want a new guy to do this. And also, we've looked at trends just hockey-wise. Like, I think 2 of the last 4 Stanley Cup winners fired their coach in the middle of the season. So mm-hmm. I think they were trying to do the same thing. And I know I was definitely in support of it when it happened, and you can see it. It's in writing, so I have proof. I'm not just saying that on the air. And I love what he's done. He's tenacious. He wants to win, and he's taken 2 teams to the Stanley Cup after being hired in the coach in the middle of the season, of course. So, you know, maybe he can do it again.
I got to laugh. Spencer's the greatest. Because, you know, it's just so funny. There's just no heart whatsoever with Gallant. It's like, Gallant, this city changed. October 1st of 2017 changed us all forever here in Las Vegas with the shooting out over by Mandalay Bay. And then the Golden Knights just started playing at the right time, and it was a perfect storm that culminated into a community coming together like I've never seen. The most transient city in our country comes together like we were all brought up here. It was really a cool thing to see, and it really culminated with what the Golden Knights did. So to not even feel a little bit of remorse for Gerard Gallant, I love you, Wiz, but it's just like, I was also supportive of Pete DeBoer like you, and I said it on the show. But I have a much, I had remorse. I felt bad for Gerard Gallant. Like, wow, this guy to a degree changed my life. He had, I didn't, anyone out there that said they had the Golden Knights going to the Stanley Cup Finals their first year on a bucket list is lying, because you would never put that on a bucket list because you'd be a moron to do it, and yet it happened. Just like me and Wiz. Did we put flying on the Goodyear blimp on a bucket list? No, because we'd have been morons to do it. But did we fly on the Goodyear blimp? We did. So the thing is that happened, and because it happened, and because it was life-altering for me and so cool, Gerard Gallant has a huge spot in my heart, not just because he was a Red Wing and played and wore the A when Stevie Eiserman wore the C years ago in Detroit, but because of what he did for this community and what the Golden Knights did for hockey, me being just a huge hockey advocate and lover, and to watch hockey morph into what it has in the state of Nevada is so cool. And then this year to see Gage Quinney play for the Golden Knights, the first ever Nevada-born player to play in the National Hockey League. This has been really cool. And really, I'm not gonna, it starts with Bill Foley and George McPhee, but Gerard Gallant was a huge part of that. And so let's at least have a little wake for him and say we feel bad. I'm happy DeBoer's doing what he's doing. I wasn't supportive of it, but you got to be a little sad for the guy. Wiz, we need to wake the Wiz like the Grinch of Soul Christmas. We got to get the heart to grow a few sizes.
I didn't lose an hour of sleep, I'll tell you that.
Spence had the cab waiting for him outside the T-Mobile. Yeah.
Look, I appreciate everything.
And the Beyonce song going, you must not know about me.
The Patriots haven't been successful because of sympathy, I'll tell you that.
Close it out with this. Goalie controversy. Yes or no?
Next year, yes. This year, no. This year, Marc-Andre Fleury is the goaltender, and I think they will ride him. I think unless he really starts looking bad in the postseason, they're going to ride Marc-Andre Fleury, and they're going to beat that horse into the Elmer Glue Factory. Next year, Fenner and Fleury, that is some severe competition. Fleury getting into his upper 30s, as we know, about seven concussions deep into a career, and you got a guy like Fenner who would start on almost any team in the National Hockey League, and a guy that a year ago was vying for the Vezina Trophy. I mean, it's pretty amazing that we got him as a backup goaltender. Hats off to Kelly McCrimmon. Hats off to Tim Foley for spending Bill Foley for spending the money, and hats off to George McPhee for being George McPhee.
Spence, goalie controversy.
Yes, only because our coach is Peter DeBoer. He literally doesn't care. If Fleury isn't playing up to what he wants in the playoffs, he'll be gone.
He'll yank him.
I think if round one, Vegas goes down 2-0, they make the change right there. And for sure.
Well, that's what I said. Yeah. If he doesn't get into problems, if we're winning hockey games 5-4 and Fleury lets in two bad goals but we keep winning, he'll keep riding Fleury. Fleury is going to have to be the reason they lose games to be replaced. That's what I'm saying. And that's respect, and he deserves that respect.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and next year, Leonard's a free agent. They're going to see where they're going to go with this direction.
Leonard is not going anywhere. No. They are signing Leonard. Trust me. Yeah, they are signing Leonard. They said, see you later. That's it. Oscar Dansk isn't coming back. No. Trust me.
Leonard's going to get paid, though. That's where you're going to see where the problem becomes.
He'll get paid.
I hope we win the Stanley Cup. That way Fleury, I keep saying we, I hope the Golden Knights win the Stanley Cup, because Fleury would retire at that point, and it would be a much better send-off, obviously.
Well, guys, it's great. It's, 2 hours goes by quick, man. But it was a good time. Spence, how do you feel after...
I'm ready for the third hour.
That's tomorrow night.
A full show for the Wiz Kid. What'd you think? Let's grade Spencer real quick. Oh, what's his grade, Timmy?
I'm going to give him a solid A.
Wow. I'm always giving him an A, but after he gave a C- to Otzelberger, I'm going to give him an A- just because of that. What do you got, Damon? Give him a grade.
To quote the great Billy Bob from the movie Varsity Blues, tan!
Wow, look at that. Wiz, hey, that deserves a golf clap right here.
He actually said another word before that, but I don't think you can say that, right?
No.
Brian, talk about the show tomorrow morning. It's only 8 hours away, man.
8 hours away, out of line, Fox Sports Radio, right here. Me and the Wiz will be back in studio with co-host Caleb Herring and, of course, Chris Magnum Chapman behind the wheels of steel tomorrow morning. Again, Kevin Kruger will be on live with us talking about the current state of UNLV and what he thinks the future is going to be. We've got an interview with Ricky Stanhouse Jr. You'll hear. You'll also hear that interview you heard a little bit ago with Sam Merrill and Bryce Hamilton, the star of the UNLV Running Rebels, plus the three of us, the Wiz, me, Caleb, but four of us, and Magnum, man. It'll be a good time.
And I'll be back tomorrow night at 10 o'clock with Tom Barton from TomBartonSports.com, and radio personality Chris Wynn will join us in the 11 o'clock hour. Talk some basketball, of course. So tune in. And always a pleasure, guys. Appreciate it again. It's Heatwave Sports, only on Fox Sports Radio. Good night.